Hi, welcome everyone. This is Seek Sustainable Japan, our monthly sub-series called Short Takes, where we talk about some issues that have been on our radar, things that inspire us, things that are going on in Japan, and this time also the UK and Europe. Welcome, Tova.
Hi, lovely to see you.
So I'm JJ Walsh in Hiroshima, joined by Tova, who's usually in Yokohama, but today she is in London.
So today I'm in London. Last week I was in Hamburg in Germany. So yeah, looking forward to sharing some of the things I've been seeing around here.
Let's start with the fabulous place that you're staying. It's very special. Tell us about some of the initiatives they have going.
Okay, so I'm staying at a little hotel called Inhabit, which is a registered B Corp. And I've stayed here before, happy to be back here again. And they've got some really great things going on. So just in my room, we've got a bottle of water, which you can go and refill at any point.
You said still or sparkling options, right? That's a nice
added value. All just sort of filtered normal water. It's not anything fancy, nothing bottled. You come into your room and you've got this little sort of tablet here that talks about the fact that there will only change the bed linen and towels if you request it. Then regularly monitoring water and electricity consumption, as you can see there. They ask you not to leave your card in the key slot so that things are turned off. So just things like this, the liners in the bins, in the trash boxes, both in the bedroom and in the bathroom, are paper. There's no plastic liners in the bins, which is really nice.
That's so good. Are they like reusing newspaper? Like, is it waste paper that they're
no,
using?
No, it's because of the rules here around sort of throwing out stuff. They have to use official ones, but it's called a bio liner. There you go. So that's inside, and it's biodegradable and compostable. So that's what they're using to line any of the bins.
That's awesome. Now, just last weekend, I was also in a very sustainable business. And usually when I book into hotels, I'm never quite sure. So in the comments, as I'm doing the booking, I say, by the way, I'm trying to live a plastic-free life, and I don't use single-use plastic amenities. And it was so nice when I checked in for this hotel called Arbor in Onomichi that she said, you know what, we don't use that. All of our amenities are made from bamboo. All of our water is in a carton, you know, and you're just like, you want to cry when you're when you're checking in, because it's so rare still, right?
Yes, but it's so possible. Think a little harder. Yeah.
So possible. And the whole building itself is super cool. It was renovated from an old bank. And so they've used the old bank building, you know, reusing buildings and construction is also much more sustainable because you're not creating so much of the carbon and waste that you are from making a new building, right?
Yeah, and, absolutely. I mean, so the same goes for here, I think. Where I'm in now, Inhabit, it's part of a sort of an old part of London. All the streets around here, I mean, the houses are, I don't know, 150, 200 plus years old. And it's the hotel is kind of a collection of what would have been, I think, five old houses. Now they're all connected together. But it's just, it's renovated old buildings. And you see a lot of that in Europe in general, I think, are good at reusing older buildings.
Yeah. And then you've got this, I used to call it, what is it, like a gothic chic or like a retro chic or something, where you've got the hard, cold concrete right next to all the beautiful handcrafted wood and beautiful design, right? What do you call that? Like, it's just such a beautiful way to mix and match.
Industrial chic?
Industrial chic. I like that. But I also, 2 weeks ago, I stayed at an amazing ryokan in Fukuoka called the Ryokan Ohana. And it's run by a woman, and she's taking over the family business. It was like her family heritage. She's restored a lot of the old buildings, beautiful gardens that you can see.
Oh, wow.
She also has a lot of the sense of traditional Japanese craftsmanship in modern comfortable rooms. So you have this beautiful balance there. But once again, they use cartons of water instead of plastic bottles. All the amenities are wooden and they're very vegan friendly. So we ask, can you do a vegan course? And very often in Japan, you ask, can you do a vegan vegetarian course? And people will say, sorry, we can't. And you can't book, right? You just can't stay for two nights. But she said, yes, of course, we'll try. And so this is a vegan alternative to unagi.
Oh, wow.
Unagi or eel is the local delicacy. Mm-hmm. And so this came out with one of our group got the typical traditional dish. And then we got the vegan version. And it was just a beautiful connection between the two. The chef really thought about the flavors. It was so, delicious. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. So it's so nice. Even the traditional places, right? Not just the modern places.
Yeah.
They're really thinking about it. They're really catering to the needs of international visitors, but also thinking about what is good for local people, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's really important as well, because you don't just want to sort of completely throw out the old sort of approach and ways of doing things. It's how can we bring the old and the new together and create new value, right? So that's really encouraging to see.
Absolutely. And the area is famous for its rivers. And so in the morning, we did this beautiful little canal punting boat and we had breakfast, a little bento, vegan bento they did for us. And he sang to us, sang some traditional songs. It was just so lovely. Yeah, such a wonderful experience. I would highly recommend it.
Nice. Cool.
And then as we're talking about design, because it was in Fukuoka, I also passed through Hakata, which is the main city in Fukuoka, big Shinkansen station. A lot of people fly into Hakata as well. And I really noticed how well they have designed the city in terms of adding shade. This is the front of the station, lots of shady areas, lots of trees. Mm-hmm. Even you can see there on top of the building, they put like a green roof to add shade underneath. And then they have these living walls everywhere. So even under the stylish hotels, you can see shade on the street, but also shade right in front of the hotel with those living walls. You seeing anything like that in the UK now that you're having the worst ever heat of June in, 50 years? 10 degrees bigger than normal, is it?
Yeah. I read something yesterday that said the temperatures in Northern Europe in general, sort of Central Northern Europe, have been up to 18 degrees higher than normal around here. I mean, just look at that. It's been insane.
The Guardian and just unbelievable.
It's just huge sort of heat wave that's been going on for weeks. So we were in Germany last week on a client project and it was horrendously hot. I mean, we were lucky. Most of the time we were in the sort of the client's office, which was cool. Interestingly, it's not air conditioned, the office in the traditional sense. It uses air that's pulled in over concrete underneath that then that cooler air is circulated. But even that was struggling last week because the concrete was just so hot. We do see so much more greenery, I think, in European cities, which really makes a difference when you're walking around. And I think you posted something a few days ago around the difference, the temperature difference when you've got trees versus when you haven't in urban areas. And the feeling of that, it's really noticeable walking around London yesterday, even though it's a bit cooler now these last couple of days. People crossing over to the side of the street where there's the shade and there's the trees, and how much difference that makes. It's unbelievable. And it was great that in London Climate Week, I think they were talking about sort of more sustainable approach to urban planning and things as well. So of course there were discussions around energy and all of these things, but it was very action focused. It's in the name, but they were also looking at, particularly as they were holding the conference in the hottest week ever, actually what are the practical things that we should be doing? And greenery is a massive one of them, I think. I mean, we're lucky in Europe and London that there is a lot of greenery around, but there's not in a lot of the sort of certainly the more industrial parts of cities. And it's a huge problem. They've had roads melting, airport runways melting, which has caused havoc, as you can imagine, with infrastructure. We're just not set up to deal with it. But having greenery around makes a huge difference to the temperatures. And they're also looking at what other things we could and should be doing to build climate resilience, because we're not set up.
No, and it, you know, we know that it's so much cooler when you have trees around, when you have the shade. And exactly what you said, I was following a line of people. We were walking through central Hakata, and all of us were following the shady tree lined path or going underground. I mean, it's a logical thing to do because it's so hot. So we have to create systems like this and options like this for pedestrians, for people on bicycles. I remember when we took, you know, I took students to Australia and I put my son in elementary school there and they all had big hats, you know, and it's all very safe about sunburn. Yeah. But also all of the playgrounds had shelter from the
sun.
That's
really important.
Right?
Yeah.
That's something we don't have in Japan. So my kids were never able to go on playgrounds when they were little in summer because it was too hot.
Yeah.
The metal on the playground was actually dangerous, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you can't even touch it. The slides and things are too hot. Yeah.
So we have solutions from Oliver. You're talking about the more static, cool energy flow. That was something Asby Brown was talking about in the Kobe historical buildings, which came from New Orleans design from America, right? And then we have places in the Middle East that have these static airflow designs from very, very hot temperatures. So we have wonderful solutions around the world. How can we implement it as fast as possible is the question, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I love the fact you raised the ones in the Middle East that sort of, I know Iran and stuff has incredible buildings in the desert that are naturally cooled by the design of the building. And that's inspired by termite mounds and things. So looking at nature and how nature cools things down naturally, obviously without using oil, electricity and things like this. So there's a lot to learn if we're prepared to think differently and design differently. Because you know, here no one has air conditioning in their houses, so people have been massively struggling. In Germany last week, I was chatting to some of the people we were working with, some of the locals, and they were saying that they were coming into the office more than usual because it's the only place that's cool. Their homes are not cool. Schools have had to shut because they don't have air conditioning and it's too hot.
But we see that in Japan, especially. Energy prices are so high right now because of the Iran war, because of the oil prices increasing. So we're seeing more and more people going into department stores, going into libraries, community spaces. So prioritizing these places because people can't afford it at home. And then having these safe places where people can go is going to be more and more of an important point, right?
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Now, one of the things you talked about, which London is doing in terms of emissions, which we know is very important for people's health, is having an encouragement or fines if your car or your vehicle doesn't meet low emission requirements, right?
Yeah.
This is really interesting.
So it started off some years back, even when I was still living in London, I think, way back. It was just the low emission zone at that point. And then it became the ultra low emission zone when they kind of got even stricter about the sort of what was allowed. And they've recently, well, 2023, I think they expanded it to what you just saw on the map there. It used to be just sort of central London itself, the sort of the business district, but they've now expanded it out. And this is, as you can see, the only day it's not that applicable is Christmas Day, so that people can move around and see their families more freely. But the rest of the time, if you drive into London area and your vehicle does not comply with the really strict emissions sort of regulations, then you have to pay. And so some people you know, if they're only coming in now and again, they will pay the fine, but it's not viable if you're paying that every day, day in, day out. And it applies to individual commuters, small businesses, everything. And the government supported it with a sort of scrappage scheme to support, I think, small businesses if they had, and MPOs as well. If they had older vehicles that didn't comply and they needed to replace those, they could get a sort of a subsidy for doing that. Electric vehicles are exempt, of course, because of no emissions, at least as they're running. So it's really made a noticeable difference. Just walking around London the last couple of days, the air is so much cleaner. It's quieter.
And you also have electric buses there too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Apparently during London Climate Action Week, they were celebrating the 3,000th electric bus on the roads in London, because those used to be a big issue. And there was something I saw when they were interviewing people a few years back about the low emission zone. And of course, a lot of people protesting, this is really, you know, unfair, da da da. And then one woman whose daughter had died due to pollution related sort of respiratory problems said, you know, for us, she was in sort of the maybe segment of society that can't afford their own cars. So they were using buses. And she said, waiting day in, you know, day out, every day for buses alongside the road with all that pollution was what caused the problems.
Yeah.
And this is a real health issue. So that was one of the key focus areas last week, I think, for the conference. Absolutely.
And I think you feel that as a electric car driver. You're like, breathe in deep, kids. Don't worry. Driving past you. My kids had asthma growing up. I've had respiratory illnesses, you know, and you realize what a horrible thing it is not to be able to breathe, right?
Yeah.
And that there's so much less asthma and respiratory problems now that more people do have electric cars, more buses are electric. So we're really hoping to see this in Japan, more electric vehicles, especially transportation in the city, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know it's sort of when I've been walking to the station sometimes and the bus goes past, you just get that cloud of, you know, emissions. And it's just, I'm so conscious of it. It's horrendous.
I think I'm more sensitive to it after driving an electric car. Because if I rent a regular gas car, I'm like, what is that smell? You know, like you really notice it. And then like when I take guests to Miyajima Island and all the ferries that you have to take are diesel, like you really notice the emissions, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I think, you know, doing something like a low emission zone like London's done and a few other cities, I think, around the UK, it's controversial and it requires a lot of planning and support because obviously it does impact particularly small businesses and things or people who don't have the option of public transport to get in. And so I think it needs to be thought through very carefully. But the benefits once you've, you know, put it in place are huge for health, for you know, the sustainability long term of these cities. It makes a massive difference.
Absolutely. And where, you know, the voter, the commuter, the customer can also play a role is when you see an electric bus, you comment on it. We have one that comes to my neighborhood. I always tell the driver, oh, it's so cool, it's electric. Electric taxi. Yeah. Oh, it's cool, you have an electric taxi. You know, and we are seeing it. But to add that bit of encouragement, it doesn't cost you anything. And it really makes them think, oh, wow, the customers want this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe on that point, one of the things when I was looking through the Climate Action Week sort of agenda and what they were looking at and the takeaways, one of the big areas they were looking at was climate disinformation. And tackling that, how do we deal with all the untrue stuff that is being spread throughout the media, particularly social media, around, you know, the causes of the problems we're having? And we know particularly certain places in this world are strongly denying and are pushing false narratives out there, which means
still
people don't
still.
Yeah, I know, it's unreal, right?
But what is it to their benefit? How does that benefit them? That's the big question, right? Because they get money, they get funding from fossil fuel companies.
There you go. Yeah.
They're part of some industry that is benefiting from everybody else's demise.
Absolutely.
So horrific.
Yeah.
The worst villain of any movie, right?
Totally is. And it's so short-sighted because they're still living on this planet as well. So they might get richer in the short term, but, you know, long term, they're really shooting themselves in the foot.
Alyssa, about food for a minute. I had an amazing okonomiyaki, a vegan okonomiyaki in Onomichi, just a really small hole in the wall place. The guy had been a sommelier at Gansu, so he's like a really high level, talented guy, but also runs this little okonomiyaki shop. And he made vegan okonomiyaki with a kind of ratatouille center. So it was all like tomato and vegetables. And oh my gosh, it was just beautiful. Wow. And, you know, absolutely in stride. No problem to have vegan sauce. No problem to have a vegan option. It was just so inspiring to see. Like anywhere could do it. If right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Now I've had some really good food.
Some great places, right?
So this place, I am now the hugest fan of a restaurant. Well, they've got a few around London. It's a small chain called Oaxaca. So it's kind of Mexican street food, they describe themselves as. But I mean, I've been going there for a few years. It's wonderful food. Around 50% of the menu is vegetarian or vegan. So it's never a problem finding something to eat, and it's really, really good and very creative, wonderful use of ingredients. But when I got back after our dinner there last night, I'd noticed some things on the menu. It had indications of like the carbon footprint of your food, of different choices. So people eating there can make an informed choice of, if I choose this dish versus this dish, here's the difference in my carbon impact. Really wonderful to see that kind of level of literacy, climate literacy going on. And it had information about
that for like all your products. Yeah. Like I would love for this product to say these cans are 100% recycled. You know, like we have recycled these thousands of times. Where exactly do all the ingredients come out? How much carbon impact is this product? How is that not part of our labels so that we can have more informed choices?
And that helps with that disinformation thing we were talking about, right? Because if people can, you know, if it's legislation, people have to be transparent and honest about what they're putting in their products, where it's come from, how it's made, and people have access to that information easily, then I think we could all be making much better informed choices. And what Hack have done, if you go and look at their website, I mean, it had sustainability built in from the very beginning. They're really looking at sort of lowering their carbon intensity per person eating, zero waste to landfill, things like this, tracking their carbon emissions of the food. And they're working with local producers and farmers as well, so that the beef that they use is regeneratively produced, and they've massively reduced A, the amount on the menu, but B, just being more creative in the way that they're using it. So rather, one of the things they talked about in the report is sort of usually for this dish, people use this type of meat and then the rest of it is not used, this kind of thing. So rather than being fixated into that mindset of for this dish, it must have this cut of meat and then the rest is less valuable, they've reframed that and said, well, actually, how could we use all of it and just be more creative about what we're doing with the menu? And by doing that, they've massively reduced the amount that they need to use, because they can use so much more of the animal itself rather than having to get many more animals. They're produced, you know, getting it from places where it's they can track where and how it's being produced. It's just the whole sort of holistic approach they've taken to designing not only the menus but actually the culture and the buildings and everything. It's really, really impressive. So I think that's a wonderful model for anyone sort of in the restaurant business, thinking about going into the restaurant business. Go and see what they're doing, because it's really a whole new way of looking at it and so much more sustainable.
Yeah, I'd love to see more of that, right? Like, and we do. You run across places where the especially young people are starting a restaurant business and they're really talking farm to table, even growing a lot of their own foods. It is happening in Japan too. It's really exciting when you come across people like that, right?
Yeah. It's just a mindset shift, right? It's absolutely possible, and it's really great to see new businesses doing that. I mean, it's something I think we've talked about before, how it's not just the bigger established places that need to be looking at this, but when you're starting a business from scratch, you have an opportunity to build in sustainability, diversity, you know, really good governance around all of these things from the beginning. You've got a blank slate. It's so much easier to do it from the beginning rather than fix problems later on.
Absolutely. Let's switch gears a little bit, talk about clean energy, which is, of course, big deal. Now, this is my neighborhood, and I have, since I've lived here almost 30 years in Hiroshima, I keep walking around the neighborhood, and it's good exercise for me, but every time I get to the top, I try to count how many solar panels I see on people's roofs. And so there's about 10%. And it's interesting because that is true all across Japan. Only 10% of people who have sunny roofs are using it to fill with solar panels. And we just got brand new solar panels to extend on the ones we already had. So now we have 7 kilowatts of solar panels on the roof. And we added a home battery. And so it's really interesting to see, and now I get all this great data every day. So this is a midday in June. We're getting 4.8 coming, and we've got two sides of our roof is covered in solar panels. And so we've got three and then four. So different times of the day, but we have longer power generation. So we're only using 0.2 kilowatts in this picture. 4.6 is going out to the grid. Now we don't make much money on the payback we did for 10 years in Japan. They had a scheme like that. But solar power panels have come down so much in price. Now on the right side, the blue side, you see the home battery, 100%. So it's just so nice to see how the system works. Having these updates, right? So it's telling you you're making this much. Okay, it's a good time to charge the electric car, right? Yep. So you're using the power that you're generating. And then what excess goes to the battery when the battery's full, it goes to your neighbors because your clean energy is going to the grid and they're using it because they're in your neighborhood, right? And so even though you're not, the price has come down so much that it's still a good deal for you, but you're still helping your neighborhood create more clean energy. And in Japan, even if you don't have your own house, you're renting an apartment, you can source your own renewable energy.
Yes.
There are companies like Mina no Denki, Hachidori Denyoku, right? So you can sign up with them. Your local utility has to pay them what you're paying to fund renewable energy. And then they're also funding lots of wonderful sustainable businesses around Japan. So it's something everybody has an option to do now. And we were talking about how can normal people make a difference? Well, this is one of them, right? You can either put solar on or you can source your renewables, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it would be great to get this knowledge out there more, because I know so for example our favorite people Maimizu have been doing a tie-in with Hachidori
It's wonderful,
so that there are mutual benefits there, but also just helping spread the word about this so that people have that as an option. So it'd be really good to see that getting out there more. I think at the moment it's sort of more the nerds like you and me who know about this and perhaps.
And then the assumption is it's too expensive, right? But when you look into it, and then I think, well, I'm not making a huge amount of money, but I would rather pay $25,000 a month to paying off my solar than to just paying the grid for fossil fuel energy, right?
Yeah.
So if you have the opportunity to do it long term, you will make your money back. It does pay off for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's all slowly moving, but it feels like we need faster movement now, especially with this huge heat wave and all these shocks happening. This is the time to really turn a corner, right?
Yeah, we've always said that people don't usually change unless there's a burning platform under them, right? And it really feels like we're standing on that burning platform now, literally and figuratively. And we've got to change. We've got to see this for what it is and make some better choices.
Absolutely. But there are solutions, right? We don't have to just hide in a cave, right? We can move forward. We can have a better life, you know, but we have to make the hard choices now is the problem, right?
Yeah, very much so.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tova. And one little shout out at the end. The YouTube channel Seek Sustainable Japan has passed 1.8 million views. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, everybody, for watching. Unbelievable. So thanks everyone for watching doesn't it show, Tova, that there is a need for this kind of channel to talk about in a positive way what we can do, what is happening, which is inspiring. So I was really happy to see that.
Yeah, we need that. There's so much negative stuff in the news right now. I think, if we can do our little part to spread some more positivity, that's a good thing.
Absolutely. So thanks, everyone, for joining. Thanks so much, Tova. And we'll see you again next month, everybody. Take care. Yeah.